Attention musicians of all levels. It's not always easy picking out a song by ear. Sometimes you need a little help. Well, I have the app for you. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, or ukulele for over a million songs. They're all available at your fingertips. You also get tools like a tuner, metronome, chord library, lessons, videos, and more. You can find out any song you want. It also has like transpose button. It has auto scroll that you can change the speed to so you can play along with the song. A lot of the songs have the lyrics there so you can sing along with them. Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone today and start playing. Start playing any song you want. Ultimate Guitar, that's the place for you. Let's get down.
You gotta open the vault.
Open my vault?
Open your vault.
Once I open the vault, it ceases to be a vault.
You have no choice.
Leave the vault.
It's time for How Did I Get Here? From the Vault. And now, here's your host, Johnny Downey.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to another episode of How Did I Get Here from the Vault, where we reach back into our vault of hundreds of episodes, pull one out, shine it up, and re-release it just in case you missed it or in case you want to hear it again. Gang, today we are going all the way back to episode 330 from November 27th, 2014, with Sabrina Ellis and Andrew Cashin from A Giant Dog and Sweet Spirit. Also, they do their own solo things now, but back in 2014, they were just doing A Giant Dog and Sweet Spirit, and they had just completed making a record with Mike McCarthy, the great producer and engineer, and they were about to head out on the road with the legendary Austin band Spoon. And they were very excited about doing that tour with Spoon. We have a really great conversation about crazy shit that happened to them in New York, making fun of the famous headliners that they get to open for, being a sexy barista. and also, like, these two artists, man, I don't know if you've ever seen A Giant Dog, or you've ever seen Sweet Spirit, but I saw Sweet Spirit in 2018 at ACL Festival. I've seen them a couple times. I've also seen A Giant Dog once. Fucking great band. Both of them extremely high energy. Like, they go, like, a grab you by the throat kind of performance. But that 2018 Sweet Spirit performance was, like, so explosive. Like, these people on this stage during the day playing to a lot of people that love them and a lot of people that had never seen them before. And everybody was transfixed on Sabrina Ellis. And that just the power of her performance, the power of whatever energy a performer has inside of them that has magnetism, that pulls you in and makes you not look away from them while they're doing what they're doing. Sabrina Ellis has this. She really does. Phenomenal, phenomenal artist. Andrew Cashin, phenomenal artist too. A Giant Dog, Sweet Spirit, amazing bands. And this conversation from way back in 2014 is great. Listen, gang, it was getting cold. And when they came over, the day that they came over to sit down and talk to me, I was making some soup. And so my house smelled real soupy, and Sabrina did not agree with Sabrina. She wasn't happy about it. So the jokes that she's making about the soup is about the soup that I made. So this is from, it was Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving when this came out. November 27, 2014, episode 330 with Sabrina Ellis and Andrew Cashin from A Giant Dog and Sweet Spirit. Please enjoy this conversation. And let's get down.
How did I get here from the vault?
Brought your own drinks.
We don't trust anybody.
Yet we are, in some way, children of Mike.
Yeah? How's that?
McCarthy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, didn't you guys learn a lot when you worked with him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did too.
Yeah.
I bet Britt did too. Frenchie mm-hmm. did too. You guys know Frenchie?
We do. We didn't know Frenchie worked with Mike.
Yeah. I think, you know, there's a, it's interesting because with people that come through and do the podcast, I get their music and I listen to it. Mike is always like, it's always great songs, great band, a great vibe. Like, he really curates his productions pretty well. Do you think that?
He's picky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He always tells us he just works on the projects that he likes.
Yeah. That's what he does.
Yeah.
You're not going to hear some weird Luke Bryan album.
Yeah.
You guys know who that is?
No.
He's this guy that you probably see him at the Shell stations. Like, he's in the, like, where the garbage can is, there's like a picture of him, and he's like, all right. And he got a hat on. And he's got very, very white teeth, like freakishly white teeth.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Is he pop country?
I would say he has his song. What are we doing? Let's talk about
Is he local? No.
He's a Nashville guy. He's very, very famous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he does this thing like at the beginning of the songs. He's like, like Jay-Z.
There's kind of a crossover going on between hip-hop and pop country, I've noticed when I listen to the radio. There's a song I don't know how I feel about it, but it's like, honky-tonk. Ba-donk-a-donk.
Oh yeah, that's like 10 years old.
Oh,
that was my ringtone in 2004.
And Andrew's ringtone goes.
That's pretty good. Did you make it yourself with a theremin?
No, it's just like a theremin sound.
Oh,
creeps people out.
I did that with that. Have you ever seen a pocket piano?
Yeah,
it does. It does that.
Cool.
I did it on my Halloween episode. Same sound. Nice. We're like kindred spirits.
Yeah,
in spooky sounds. Dude. So your record, Bone, is amazing. I love it. And I set out to see Sweet Spirit. Now, are you both in that band too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We started Sweet Spirit this past January. It's this about January. To come up a year for Sweet Spirit. And he and I have been writing together for a really long time. We had a giant dog for about 8 years.
Eight?
Yeah, you do this every time.
Damn.
You do this every time I mention how old a giant
eight
dog
years.
Is. 8 years. So in dog years, you know, 48. Getting old.
Is that 32?
Oh, man.
No,
it's
24.
64. But what are y'all measuring? I thought dog years
were
7 4 years.
7 years. I'm thinking of presidency.
And I'm putting up six fingers,
dude,
too.
I'm
we're
sorry.
All,
but
yeah.
No, our presidential age, yes, it would be 32.
So if the dog, a presidential dog.
Yeah.
If a giant dog were president. Geez, that's a long time. How do you guys, what's the difference? Because I didn't hear Sweet Spirit. I found this article online that was written by somebody that was like a culmination of all the blogs. And it had like the 11
Okay, that was written by somebody with British Airways. And because London is starting a direct flight. To Austin. And they listed Sweet Spirit as one of the top 11 bands
I know.
To watch in Austin. And I started getting all these people congratulating me. I'm like, oh, thank you so much for, you know, being really proud of me that British Airways finds us to be one of the top 11 bands in Austin.
No, it was culminated through
blogs. Yes,
which is good.
It was Side One, Track One. It was John Laird that nominated us and wrote about us.
So... I didn't find any music, but I trusted the picture. It was so cool. Honestly, I was like, well, this has got to be cool.
Oh, that shot was Tim Griffin, Brooklyn Vegan.
Well, that's a great photographer because he captured that moment.
One of our very first shows. That was Hole in the Wall in January. When my other band, Bobby Jealousy, broke up, I didn't want to cancel the free week dates that we had. And I got some guys together really fast. I think we practiced four times in 1 week and then played that Hole in the Wall show and a Red 7 show, and that was the birth of Sweet Spirit.
Wow.
At the beginning of the year.
And so what's gonna go on with that?
Well, we had a residency at the Black Heart in July. Do you want to talk about... he doesn't want to talk about this. We had a residency at the Black Heart in July, and as a gift to us, they did a live recording, and they're going to release our live album, Sweet Spirit Live at the Black Heart. That'll be out first next year. The next thing that will be out is an EP that Mike McCarthy, of course, recorded in one day.
Yes.
As kind of just for fun. And then we decided we'd better use it because use what you've got, you know.
Is that a sweet spirit?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then our third release will be an LP that Sweet Spirit's recording next week with Mike. We all took a week off work and we're going to spend it with him.
Man, what a great thing.
Yeah.
You guys...
We've got a bunch of ideas.
You do?
Bringing in a lot of auxiliary musicians.
And oh, really?
Strings and horns.
I noticed there was some horns on the A Giant Dog.
And yeah. And A Giant Dog's third LP will have more of that, more horns, more strings.
I love it, man. And you guys are able to, like, even, like, bring it... You know, there's a dynamic in the band. It's not just all, like, you know, energy and what's the fuck you song?
Oh.
Stuff like that. You know what I mean? That you can bring it. There's
it's nature.
You move. You have dynamics.
Thank
there you,
you
go. God, that was hard to figure out that word. So how did you guys meet? Are you guys lovers?
No. We are not.
Andrew.
Are, well, you're both roommates.
You don't love me.
Do you pretend to be lovers like
sometimes.
On stage? Yeah.
I've bitten her ass on stage a couple times.
All right.
That's about as romantic.
It was never romantic at all?
No, not really.
We're roommates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And our bass player lives with us, too.
What's he like?
He's a real level-headed man.
Civil War buff.
Yeah, he's about to another reenactment pretty soon. I'm excited.
Oh, no shit.
He had retired from that, but turns out...
He's back in the game.
Yeah.
He's back in the game.
Yeah. He loves that shit, dude.
Wow. Does he are you guys into it?
Oh yeah, he has a lot of valuable knowledge for us about
God, the Civil War. Band trips are amazing.
The band trips are good.
Yeah.
And did you notice on Bone there's a track called Civil Whore?
Yes.
That one was inspired by a story Graham told us. About during the Civil War times, the prostitutes in the South were just spreading disease like wildfire among the soldiers. And they needed to get rid of these prostitutes so that they could try to save some of the men's lives for the war effort. And so they just packed all the whores on a boat, and a steamboat, and sent them up river. And as this boat was traveling up the river, men had caught word of this, like this boat of whores, and men were just waiting on the sides of the banks.
Oh, they didn't know about the
just
fire.
Just jumping into the, exactly, diving into the water, swimming to the boat, and partying and having a great time. And that's what that song's about. And we also have some...
He's just like full, like, especially when we're on tour, like, listen to me, you get tired of listening to music, you get tired of reading, like, it's just so many hours in a van. He's like a little storyteller.
And we'll stop
great.
At...
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know that much about
we'll
history.
We'll stop at old battlefields
he knows everything.
And
yeah.
Take a look around. Especially
cool
if Graham's
shit.
Really hungover, we'll march him around an old battlefield.
So how did you two meet? Do you write these songs together? I noticed that you're both credited for writing songs. I didn't know if you each wrote songs or if there was a together song writing.
Well, first question, how did we meet?
Oh, did I ask all those questions?
We've been friends since high school. We were, you know, in the final throes of puberty, maybe 15 and 16 years old, and our guitar player, Andy Bauer, the one with the big poofy blonde fro, it wasn't his idea, it was Jason Smith who... You might know him from OBN 3s. He played guitar in OBN 3s.
I don't know that band.
It's a band that Andrew, Graham, and Jason Smith were in for a few years with our drummer, Orville. I don't know. It would be hard for me to tell you the whole lineage.
It's like a family
of what's
tree
going
of
on,
incestuous jammers.
We've all known each other since high school. And
wow.
Somebody...
You went to high school here?
No, we went to high school outside of Houston.
Oh, where?
In Spring.
Oh, cool.
We went to
what
rivaling high schools. He went to Klein Oak.
Oh, yeah, Klein Oak.
I went to Klein Collins, which is new at the time.
Okay.
I don't remember. We were Tigers, I guess. And this is so irrelevant. Jason Smith knew, and Orville knew, and you know, in my heart, I knew that we weren't going to get dates to the homecoming dance. And so we assembled this band, and Andrew was the bass player and second singer, and I sang. Orville played drums, and he would go on to play drums for A Giant Dog for about 7.5 years.
Were you guys writing songs then?
No. Andrew had a band where he wrote songs like Eatin' Muffins.
Eatin' Cupcakes.
Eatin' Cupcakes about being walked in on while masturbating.
Did that happen? Yeah.
Doesn't anybody knock anymore?
That's a line from
Eatin' Cupcakes.
Fast Times.
Yeah.
What, who walked in?
Oh, I don't want to tell this story.
Oh, come on, man.
No, I can't. It's too personal.
I got to keep my sponsors.
It's too personal.
But okay, that band.
I understand, but that's great, though. Yeah, I'm just glad it happened.
Yeah.
I'm sorry
that all the songs we wrote about were just about poop and dicks and, I don't know. It was a immature, but fun.
And they were called the Wee Beasties, and that was in high school. I would go to all their shows, and we'd have this great time in the teen environment, very wholesome.
Was it? No. Oh, God. Does anybody... I got to get this out of the way. People tell you you look like that actor guy, right?
Yeah, okay. All the time.
What's his name?
Which one?
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
He's like a poor man's Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, you're not. You're almost like... I almost feel like we should take some pictures that really make it look... I'll be like, oh, yeah, Jake Gyllenhaal was over putting some Casio on my new song.
And I didn't even plan it. Like, I was growing my hair out, and he comes out with the movie, and he's got long hair now, and everybody just goes, you look exactly like him now.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah, there you...
You could look like...
Chris Farley or something.
So if Andrew dies...
Carrot Top.
Yeah.
Hey, come on now.
What?
I've gotten Carrot Top before.
You don't look like Carrot Top.
She used to have orange hair.
If Andrew dies, I could just call up Jake Gyllenhaal, and I could...
Is that how you say it?
He can probably sing. He could probably dance.
Oh,
probably.
Is that how you say his last name?
Okay, sorry, I interrupted you and we went on a tangent.
Jake Gryffindor.
Gryffindor.
So you're in high school. You decide to start a band for the
homecoming dance.
So you played the homecoming dance?
We played the homecoming dance.
Yeah, we played the homecoming dance.
Pretty avant-garde.
Like, cover songs.
What, 600 people?
What were you covering? Oh, this guy with the goddamn thing.
Go ahead, close that.
Okay, so you were covering what, the hits of the day?
No. It was.
What were you guys covering?
God, what
we were
we
covering? Joan Jett. We were covering.
Oh yeah.
R.E.M.
What?
We were covering.
What
Green
year
day.
Was this?
This was 2003.
Wow, that's very hip for young guys at that time. I mean,
our peers did not
our
think it was hip.
Disagreed.
Dude.
Good. That makes you even cooler.
The parents and the chaperones who were at the dance were just like, fuck yeah, like in the back. But they wanted to hear some rap.
And No Doubt. They wanted to hear some No Doubt.
Yeah.
But you guys, okay, so you what R.E.M. songs did you hear?
It's the End of the World.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I hear songs every now and then on the radio that we covered that night, and it just brings it all back. We covered Rock and Roll All Night.
Stevie Wonder.
Oh, very superstitious.
Yeah. How did that turn out?
Favorite.
As a young band.
Yeah, it was good.
We did
covered Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah.
That one was
a little
iffy,
a little rough.
But we did the Ramones.
Oh, yeah?
We did.
What Ramones? Wanna Be Sedated?
No, it was...
We did Turning Japanese, not by the Ramones.
Oh,
but
yeah,
like,
by the Vapors.
What was that song called?
We did like
was
their cover of Do You Wanna Dance?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We did Earth Angel from... We did Johnny Be Good and Earth Angel.
I think that's cool that, like, in high school, I think that you're attracted to those songs because you can play them.
Yeah.
Like, and they're catchy.
Yeah.
And they have some kind of, like, urgency feeling that you have when you're that age that you can totally latch on to. Even the Johnny Be Good. Like, you're going to get out of there and fucking be someone someday.
I mean, all those songs were just, like, songs that... In your mind, when you heard it, you'd be like, I would love to cover this.
Yeah. They're
especially
huge.
The Johnny Be Good shit, like watching Back to the Future. Sure, like, I want to be Marty McFly.
Yeah.
But Andrew's email in high school was like, Marty McFly for you at hotmail.com. If anyone wants to send him some fan mail.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
And
Oh, and our name was Youth in Asia.
Genius.
We need to do a 40-year reunion tour in like
I was gonna do 30 years. I was gonna do a 30-year reunion with my band 2 summers ago, but the guitar guy got wife was pregnant, and she thought that was complete frivolity to go to the Woodlands, which is where we started.
No way. We were just south of you.
Yeah,
but I was like fucking 103 years before you guys, 20 years before.
Yeah. Now, we used to go to the Woodlands and play shows
at the rec center.
Yeah, at the rec center, and there'd be these like really good-looking Woodlands girls that we'd try to get back to Spring.
Yeah.
But there's a trailer park in between Spring and the Woodlands. And so they would be in a separate car, and they would just like, once we hit the trailer park, they would just, nope, back up, turn around, and head back to the Woodlands.
So you'd have to hang out with the less attractive Houston girls like me.
Yeah.
No. Come on, Sabrina. That was a joke. Don't do this to me.
I was an ugly duckling in high school.
You were?
Yeah.
Did that make it easy to get up and front a band like that? Tell me, what's that dynamic in your head? You know what I mean? Like, there's something about being outcast, because it happens to a lot of people.
In high school and middle school.
And they
school,
turn around and make their life where a light comes on them and everyone in the room has to look at you and pay attention. And then you've somehow turned the tables on these people.
They still thought I was weird after the high school dance. It wasn't like I did the dance and they were like, oh, she's actually cool, like at the end of a 70s high school movie. But but now when I run into people who I knew in high school who I don't really even necessarily remember, I find that they're following me online and, you know, watching my life happen while they have like kids and and do the kind of things they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
so
man.
I guess,
but in your mind did you get empowered at that moment? Did you personally,
I like, felt did you cool feel like... just making friends with some guys from another school who didn't know how much of a loser I was. And so I started going to parties and stuff as a result of this high school cover band. Lots of parties, and it was great. And I had this really great car. It was a 78 Camaro with T-tops and V8 engines. And I started, like, picking up my friends in this car and partying all weekend. That was more the transformation, was, like, to do with the partying. But the rock and roll facilitated the partying, so...
But even more than the partying, it's all of a sudden you're part of something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where you weren't before.
Exactly.
Rock and roll does have that, man.
Like a pack animal of a sudden. And then suddenly it's 10 years later.
Found your tribe. You know, you didn't belong with anyone there. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, these are the guys that I can roll with. And so what was your role in that group? Like as in the, like in a social way.
Facilitating skinny dipping?
Yeah, I was...
First one naked?
Yeah. I was very enthusiastic to get everybody naked and into my grandmother's pool. Mamu, if you're listening to this, you knew. And I dated the craziest guy in our group during high school, this Russian guy who we're all still friends with. He's moved to Austin as well. And his parents didn't realize, or maybe didn't care, that in the United States it wasn't normal to have like 30 teenagers over all weekend long running around naked and drunk. And so that went on, and I felt like...
Were there other girls there? Was it...
Yeah.
Okay, good, because I'm like, Jesus, Sabrina.
There were plenty of girls
fight
around.
Off the naked dudes.
No. I mean, they were all real skinny back then.
Yeah.
Wasn't much to look at.
So was there, once you guys got into this thing, were you like, I'm going to be in music? This is what I'm going to do with my life?
No.
Were you like that? What were you going to do? Was there a plan, or were you just hanging out and going to school and partying down and having a band?
Yeah, I was trying to get through school.
What kind of student were you? What kind of student were you, Andrew?
I studied graphic design.
Oh, yeah? Oh, you mean when you went to college?
Yeah.
You went to college. Where'd you go?
Texas State.
Okay. And you, Sabrina?
Did I go to college?
Huh?
I went to college for a couple years in New York.
doing?
And then I dropped out. Experimental theater.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if... I don't know if cool is the right word for that.
I think it's cool to be adventurous and do something different.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's important. That's great. I mean, it comes out in your music, like all this stuff that you guys are saying. Not the naked stuff, but it definitely comes out in your music. I mean, it really does. It's great. It's like what you've picked up along the way and what you've earned is coming out in what you make.
I remember arguing with Andrew, not heatedly, but after I left school and moved to Austin, I lived on Andy Bauer's couch for a little while, and it was about a year until Andrew moved here too, and he and I started writing songs on the roof of my house that I lived in on the east side. And it was a really low roof, and we'd climb up there and drink wine, write like the beginnings of A Giant Dog. And I was saying, we should start a band. We should play around town because we liked going to shows. And he was
who
like,
were you going to see then?
Elvis and Shapes Have Fangs. Black Joe Lewis.
Black Joe.
And Leo Rondeau.
Yeah.
Some people that are still around. And we'd go to Beerland. We'd go to Hole in the Wall 4 or 5 times a week, ride bicycles. I couldn't do that anymore.
Not tripping.
Tripping shrooms. And we followed the OCs religiously. Like when they would come to town, they had Ty Siegel. They're a really popular Bay Area band. We're actually playing with them tonight. Oh. But they'd have Ty Siegel open, and he was a one-man band at the time. And we'd try
really?
So hard to get them to party with us. We would like... offer
anything,
great times. And but I remember saying, let's start a band, let's do this too. And Andrew's like, no, that's just a kind of dead end street. Let's just do this, let's like write songs, whatever, it's fun, but I don't want to start a band, I want to be a graphic designer. Like, you can do both.
Did you design this stuff, the album stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. You did a great job.
Thank you.
Do you do other stuff, like do you do it
no
could one hire you for such
one
things?
One could. But I'm pretty busy.
Oh, right.
Yeah, that's just not something I explore.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now you guys just do music all the time?
Pretty much.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me ask you a quick question. Sorry, I got lost in your story. Before you came back here, how did you stop the... What made the experimental... Like, how did the New York thing end for you? Like, what made you decide to come back here and sleep on Andrew's couch?
It was Andy's couch.
Andy's couch.
But I've just always had this reckless streak, and, you know, Andrew too. But I moved from New York because I had to, because I was there at 18 and 19 and was just doing everything wrong that I could possibly do wrong, and working a job waiting tables and spending all the money I made just...
partying.
Mm-hmm. And blowing it. And so I moved here in pretty rough condition and found it a lot easier to live in Austin, and I've been here ever since. But that's why I left school. Also, I don't know, I feel like it's taken me this long. I'm in my late 20s. It's taken me this long to be able to balance that reckless streak with, you know, survival and being a, you know, citizen that carries weight in the world.
Yeah. And showing up, you know, for what you do,
mm-hmm.
at least, you know, and being there. Like, showing up's pretty important.
Yeah.
With the kind of music, you know, I don't know, somebody like Mike wouldn't work with people that weren't able to.
Well, when Mike started working with us 3 years ago, we were different. We were kind of little assholes, and our recording process was a lot different than it is now.
What in what way?
I remember Mike asking to record us, and us being like, well, who does he think he is to just, you know, make us come into the studio and take a week off of everything we wanted to do, and finish our songs, and like, you know, I don't know. I don't remember why we had that attitude. I think it's just because we were young,
yeah.
And we went and we did it really rushed, like, okay, fine, you can have us lay down the track, sure. And then now... it's like we plan for half a year, set aside so much time, take
yeah.
it really seriously,
yeah.
schedule it all out. We have outlines. We talk about the recordings that we're about to do for like a month together. Just, I don't know. There's much more communication and cooperation.
Everything now. Leading up to Bone, we just did in our garage. We didn't think we really needed anybody to help us or provide.
What were you recording on? How were you recording?
An 8-track Tascam.
Was that's cool as shit.
Orville was recording us, our drummer.
And he had a Atari 5050.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah. I mean, the
is that single? I didn't listen to it. Is that done on that?
Fight.
Or is that done
was
with Michael?
Fight.
Michael.
Michael McCarthy.
Miguel.
The first album, Fight, was done in Orville's garage.
Okay.
And so were some EPs that we had floating around before that, that some people can still find online, but I'm not sure how.
eBay.
I doubt it. I don't know.
eBay is depressing when you find your old shit on there. And it's like 35 cents.
Yeah. Nice.
And no bids.
And you're the one
I'm not saying that happened to me. Yeah, it's you. Just trying to see if anyone still likes you. Hey, come on, someone. I'll give it to you for 75 cents. Okay, so you guys, how did you started doing the songs, drinking the wine on the roof on the east side with Andy?
With Andrew.
With Andrew, sorry. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm getting everything confused. Sorry. And that's how A Giant Dog started?
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah?
Yeah.
When did you, where did you start? Did you start playing those places you were hanging out, like Beerland and Hole in the Wall? Just kind of like...
Yeah, and I had this bartender that I work with downtown now say to me the other day, he looked at me and he's like, you know what? I have this really fuzzy memory of your first Emo's show. He's like, I remember everyone there was underage or parents, and I was really annoyed. But then y'all played, and it was pretty good.
Oh, that's good.
I was like, we were 20 or 21.
Yeah,
like,
it probably looked young.
All your
though.
Friends were underage. Nobody was drinking.
And that was 8 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Man, you've come a long way since then, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess.
I mean, it wasn't a completely different style of music, but it was definitely different than what we do now.
Right. It's developed and honed.
Yeah.
And have the members all been the same since then?
The members were all the same until very recently. I mentioned a band earlier, OBN3s.
Yeah.
That's our drummer Orville's band. He also has Bad Sports. And OBN3s and Bad Sports are both really busy. And so after working together for a really long time and really enjoying it, we recorded our third album. And we feel like Orville did some of his best drum work on that. And I was really afraid of being able to replace him while we recorded the album because he was doing so much. And then this really special drummer came along out of nowhere and very aggressively pursued the drumming position in our band. So we had him come in and practice with us, and he knew all the songs, and he started hanging out with all of us, you know, partying all the time. And I don't know, it feels like we've been working with him forever, but it's been about a month, and his name is Matt Strymska.
Strymska.
Is he the same age as you guys? And mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and he was the original drummer in Joe Lewis's band.
Okay.
The Honey Bears.
But he plays with a guy, Bobby Patterson, also.
Oh, and that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
Yeah. He just knows everything, like soul, jazz, rock.
And he's
just
designing us a website.
Really?
I feel like we made him up with our imaginations and that he's not real.
That's awesome.
That we're just playing all these shows with a monkey or something.
And you're about to go, I mean, how many shows have you, I mean, like how much do you guys play? How much have you guys played? Do you go on tours? And do you?
We do about a tour a year.
And what are those, tours? Like, are they East Coast, Midwest,
usually
West Coast?
East Coast.
Okay.
Midwest, too. We love going there, but it's always, you know, small dive bars.
Yeah.
Same bands that we've always played with.
Bands in cities?
Punk scene. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you kind of reach out to the people in those scenes and set up shows yourselves that way?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oxford's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Mississippi?
Detroit, yeah.
Yeah. I love Minneapolis.
Yeah,
that's my favorite.
Minneapolis is awesome.
And playing in New York is also my
favorite. In basements in Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah?
It's
there's
fun.
Still a basement-like scene. There's still like a like an under...
It's
and
like
you guys
thriving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And people come to those shows.
Lots of people. I don't even know if they have clubs. Like, I think in
Minneapolis. No, yeah. They totally. I played clubs in Minneapolis.
But seriously, I feel like the amount of people.
Giant clubs to no one, and yeah. I'd much rather be in a basement to people the fucking amount of sweating people and that rocking.
Are in that tiny basement is just insane.
Really?
Yeah.
How does one connect into that scene? Like, not for me, but say someone's listening
it
and they're like a punk rocker.
It actually took us playing clubs. Yeah. We played the Hexagon Club a couple times and made some friends with bands up there. It's a great club. Yeah. And then, you know, one of the times we were coming through, somebody's like, you know what? Let's take this to the next level, this relationship. Let's have you play a basement show. And it was...
Let's take this shit underground.
It was a huge, crowded house. There were all kind of, like, weed tonics and alcohol and face painting. And we played with this
band. It was a scene.
Marianne and the Percolators, and they were wild and... there were people actually who had come to see us who were like, yeah, my friend from Austin told me to go to this house on this night and see y'all play. So I don't know how they were able to find it.
So there's like just this network, and if you can tap into it, you're in.
Yeah, just the atmosphere too. Like when you play a club, people I think are more self-conscious, and so they'll just sit there with their arms crossed and like...
But not in Minneapolis.
Well, yeah. They still dance, but like
such a love for Minneapolis.
In the basement, like people were singing along to our
songs.
That
is awesome.
Like, it was just insane.
Climbing on stuff.
Yeah.
How old are these people? Are they regular in their 20s? Are they able to go to clubs, or is this an alternative for young people?
There
that
was
can't
definitely
get
some underage kids there, but it was pretty balanced. I don't know.
It's most. I find we play mostly for people around our own age, and it's been that way, and it's been like. Like our audience has been maturing with us, I think. But it's really cool. Sometimes on tour, I'll see, you know, a kid and his dad. Like, that'll happen. That's happened in Cleveland. There's a kid whose dad brings him out to see us. There's a kid in Houston whose dad brings him out to see us play.
We guys play in Houston
really
Fitzgerald
dig that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fitzgerald's, Mangoes.
In Cleveland, where do you play? Grog Shop? Grog Shop, is that still there?
In Cleveland, I can't remember the name of the places we played, but there's one place that's basically a skate, like half pipe stage, and it's really ramshackle. There's, I don't know, bars on the windows and stickers everywhere. And then the other place is a hot dog place, and they're both really fun, but I don't know what they're called.
It's hard to get people out in Cleveland.
No, I feel like in Cleveland, it's like maybe 30 people, but it's the same 30 people that we've been playing to
we'll
for
play
the past
show with Obnox,
4 or 5 years.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Really?
Yeah. He records everything himself. It's real blown out. Like,
he's got this amazing voice.
How and a beautiful daughter.
Yeah.
O-B-N-O-X?
Yeah. That's our Cleveland friend.
Yeah, I'm going to check that out.
I like check something. Out the OCs too.
Oh yeah, the OCs. Sabrina and Andrew are turning me on to music as we speak. So those tours you do about one a year, and you go up there, and now you're gonna do a tour with Spoon.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna be real different.
We leave in a month.
Yeah. We went on a tiny tour with Spoon.
Yeah. How was that?
We were in our young asshole phase still. I remember how obnoxious we were.
Yeah.
Like, purposely obnoxious to them during the tour.
Really?
Yeah.
And how would you do that? How do you do that?
We would...
We did that for maybe 2 hours in the backstage area.
Yeah. And we would chant Famous, just like, Famous, Famous, Famous. Just because it's... We were used to playing dive bars. Like,
yeah.
We went from playing to like 30, 40 people to 2,000. So we were just being jackasses. Like, it was.
I love
it seemed
that you're
like
honest enough though to talk about it.
Yeah, it seemed like this alternate reality that we were thrown into, and it was going to end very soon. So we were just like, let's
destroy it.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I feel
at least it's destroyed on our terms. No one's going to take it from us. We're going to ruin it.
Yeah.
Before.
I now feel like we're friends enough with them that they understand that we're, you know, kind of cheeky assholes.
Yeah.
And they still invite us to, you know, do fun, nice things.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
We're going to take this one a little more serious.
Are you?
Yeah, it's longer.
Try to keep our
voices. You think it's
going to
be a little...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Did you lose your voice? Do you have a? Did you? If you freak out, if I party,
yeah,
I don't have. I like if I go on too tour. Hard on I become tour. Like a baby. Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have to be careful.
But the night before my day off, that's fucking crazy. Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's the way I think I handle it.
You've got to be careful. I lost my voice last tour over summer because we played
two shows
in one day, and it just. I was day drinking too, and it just like completely went out.
But that was tough.
Have you guys done any? You know, there's training that you can do just to preservative training.
Yeah,
you know, to preserve.
We're just too
lazy
to do that kind of stuff.
I used to have a real hard time when I was real young, and I started out in this band in Houston, and we were actually managed by Fitzgeralds, and they would do these show trades with different clubs around, like, oh, whatever band you want to send here, we'll have them, you know, whatever. So we went out and did like 3 days, and like the third day I had no voice. The second day I sounded like shit, and then I was like, I guess I gotta go and get this figured out. And then it was like 9 months of just really horrible training with this opera dude that was just a total dick to me. But what I learned, it really helps. Plus, if you do it all the time, that's how it stays in shape. You know, yeah. If you do it right all the time and you do it all the time, it's like you don't, it's like if you run every day, you can run as far as you want. But if you take a week off, it's real hard to, it's the same thing. It's a fucking muscle.
Yeah.
Anyway. Sorry.
We got
am
tricks.
I boring you guys?
The thing I do that's a trick actually is this.
Yeah.
Because the listeners can see that.
Yeah.
I'm making this awful face.
Yeah.
I'm sticking my tongue out, but like poking it back in at the same time.
Yeah.
It stretches my esophagus. It's very important to do.
Yeah.
And I drink the coconut water.
That's a very hydrating drink.
I drink it.
Yeah. Yes. What else?
What else? Oh.
So you guys finished, you guys are going to record an album.
Record an album?
Oh, that's the...
Yeah, the other band. The other band, we'll talk
but
about.
But your other band is recorded. I mean, your other album for A Giant Dog
LP3
is recorded.
Yeah, LP3 is recorded for A Giant Dog, and we're really excited to put that out.
And you're going to shop it?
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe...
Find someone to put it out for us.
Is that what part of this tour is going to do? Or are you...
No, I don't know.
Are you...
That would be ideal if somebody just came up to us that...
Yeah.
But, I don't know. We've got a execution, a plan of... what we're gonna do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And you got people can find all your stuff on that you have out on Bandcamp.
Mm-hmm.
That or Spotify, iTunes.
Oh, okay, it's on there too. Mm-hmm. I just went to Bandcamp. I'm sorry.
No, that doesn't matter.
How do you guys where do you guys stand? Because you're young enough to have come up in the time of music sharing and file sharing and stuff like that. How does something like Spotify Where do you stand on like, oh, you know, it doesn't pay as much. The streaming music is like, it's going to ruin everything, but it's still going to go that way. Do you guys even care?
I mean, I've just kind of accepted it.
Yeah, me too.
That's just not the way. If you want to be a musician, a career musician, you're going to have to tour 6 months out of the year.
Yeah.
And that's where you make your money. You can sell stuff while you're on tour, but don't expect to make music and put it on Spotify and just... see the money roll in. Like, that's just something.
I like having such easy access to music too.
Me too, as a fan.
Yeah.
It's like,
if anything, it helps us.
Yeah.
Like,
I work in a kitchen and I like to listen to music for, you know, 13 hours straight. And I like having access to pretty much any album I want to hear.
Yeah.
And I like that people have easy access to us. And, you know, if people want to tour into our music, I invite them to do that too, because that's a whole scene that I'm into as well. But I know that that's, I like it because it's illegal, pretty much.
Yeah. And especially booking our own tours, most of the time, there's not really any way that these people out in Cleveland,
can find out
New York,
who they're going to hear. Yeah.
Who they're going to hear. And I don't know.
Well, see, I've got guys like, do you know the band Fastball?
Yes. Yeah, I
they
love
had a couple
those
of
guys.
Really big hits, right? And I've had Tony Scalzo in here who wrote, you know, the two biggest songs.
Mm-hmm.
And he really has lived
he's
off of it.
Player.
And he's got a family. And, you know, that's his living. And it totally flips him out. And he's got a lot of anger. Mm-hmm. But there's no way to change it back, so it's just kind of wasted anger.
Yeah.
But didn't he get a theme song or something? I mean, that's something that even in this generation we hope for. We hope for theme songs.
Commercial.
And, you know, yeah, licensing stuff. Like, a giant dog just did license something to a show.
Oh, yeah?
I would never watch, but...
Oh, is it... Did you say it was like a show, like a...
The Good Wife?
Yeah.
It's my mom. It's one of my mom's favorite shows. I've never seen it or know what it's about.
Oh, yeah, I read that on your Facebook, I think. Maybe? Did I?
Probably.
I read that thing that you were like, all right, my mom's really happy about this or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've never seen that show, but, yeah. I mean, that's a big show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can understand him being angry, but I feel like the thing that provided well for him, you know, is the same thing that we can hope for now, even with, you know, streaming and technology being the way it is. You still look for those licensing deals. Yeah. And
well, look, the thing is, too, is like there was just really kind of 20 years or 30 years of that sort of like rock stars not really having to work because they sold so much, so many records. They could spend, you know, 3 years and then do a record and then do a tour. And that, I mean, that's just not really...
Now, dude, now you got to write 3 records a year and tour.
You
got to
tour all the
time.
Yeah, you got to go out. And for me, it's not, I did not see Spotify as like a threat to me because while I've been a professional musician, you know, since the early 90s and made my living that way, I've always made it in a real blue collar kind of fashion where I go to work and someone pays me for it and then I come home.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So it doesn't rush. So at least I'm glad that you guys have that kind of outlook and that you see it as a positive and that it actually spreads the word about your music and then it helps you to go out and tour and then that's how you'll make your living.
Yeah.
What kitchen do you work in?
Right now I've been at Eastside King, the Liberty location.
Oh, yeah?
For 6 months. It's pretty intense.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What do you do in there? Are you a chef?
No, I'm not a chef.
Are you?
Paul Key is the chef.
Yeah.
I fry.
Or like a sous chef? Or
I fry, what? I chop stuff, I assemble stuff, I give it to the customers.
No, I'm more self-conscious about the soup.
Oh, are we getting to try some of this
no,
soup?
No, it's going
to
be ours.
Then I don't understand why you would be self-conscious about something.
Because of the smell of the soup, you'd be like, oh, man, I work
at
the
Eastside King.
I already
told you,
King.
No one minds the smell of soup.
Oh.
I don't know what happened to you to make you think that people are disgusted by the smell of soup, but...
Not soup in general, just maybe I made a terrible soup. I always, do you guys...
As a kid, somebody was just like, you smell like soup.
That's what happened. Soupy Johnny. Uh-oh, here he comes.
Soupy Johnny. That's up. That's gonna be my rapping name.
You smell like soup.
But I think it's Soupy John. That has more of a ring to it.
It's your mom wash your clothes in soup.
Do you, Andrew, do you have a regular working job?
I got two.
What are they?
I work at Hotel Vegas.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Yeah.
Charles is a dear old friend of mine.
Yeah.
And at one point managed my career.
Nice. And Sorry. Then I work at Starbucks also.
Oh, I have questions. Yeah. Oh, look at that.
Oh, yeah.
Supporting the cause.
Frenchie used to come to my Starbucks all the time.
Oh, yeah? Which, oh, you don't have to say.
Oh, I don't know.
Unless you don't want to get assaulted by fans, your many fans.
It's off of Mopac.
Oh, okay.
It's like I don't know anybody out there. I just serve soccer moms all day. They tip well.
He winks at them.
I wink at
you
them.
Ever, have you ever picked up a soccer mom?
I got a couple.
You probably shouldn't tell stories like this because if
fired.
Anybody's going to listen to our podcast online, it's probably a soccer mom that's interested in you or somebody with the time to do it.
Yeah. I'm in this cover band that plays the places where there's cougars.
Yeah.
And like the recent divorcees that come out in packs in support of each other. And they in between sets when that girl is on fire comes on, like they sing it at the top of their lungs because they're feeling the power, their own empowerment. It's really
how
awesome.
Do I get into this crew? I want to show these women.
I would love it if you guys came to one of those shows. Sometimes I don't know if we're going to play there anymore because it's cold now, but this place, Steiner Ranch Steakhouse.
Wow. If there's lonely divorcees, we've got a place for them in
There's Cougs, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And are you single?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Be like an older woman.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind.
If you like creepy older dudes.
Oh, yeah. Like, who doesn't?
That's a guy that we every call, woman's a guy favorite. That we call sexual grandpa.
Is sexual always, yeah. grandpa.
But he's very hip. He's always behind a bush before the show smoking a J. And then okay. he comes into the show reeking of the herb, and he has like a signature dance move. And
I imagine it's very sexual.
Yeah, it involves his humping.
Yeah,
and then he hurts his back. Oh, every time he comes up and he goes, and then he points at a lady that he likes, and then he makes his way over to her while holding his back, signature dance move.
I gotta
at least three times a night.
Sexual you have grandpa. To recreate this dance move.
Sexual grandpa.
You know what would be awesome is if you showed up with him having no knowledge of you. We could pretend we didn't know each other. You could start doing his move on the floor when he shows up before he gets to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it would either be like, you know, be stars in his eyes and he'd be in love, or he'd be like, hey.
Really pissed.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, sexual grandpa dance off. Sexual grandma, sexual.
You're way too young to be doing my move. Anyway.
I know a thing or two, sexual grandpa.
I know a thing or two about the crying game, sexual grandpa.
This is reminding me of you. Earlier you mentioned in Chicago how we played two back-to-back shows. And I will never forget, we played at this record store, Bric-a-Brac. And during the set after us, the band after us, the Hemmingers,
yeah.
This homeless woman came in off the street. Oh, she was sexual grandma, but she was... the best dancer I've ever seen. She came in off the street with her parka and her missing teeth. And it was hot out. It was sunny and hot. Yeah. And she just took the floor. And she was grinning and just... She had James Brown moves. And everybody gathered around.
And they were covering
around.
Like Twist and Shout. Yeah. And like.
Oh, how awesome.
Everyone was gathered around her just watching and clapping. And then they were done. Their set was over and she walked away. She left. She didn't want to see what else was going to happen at the show. She had her fill.
She came in and said her piece and walked out.
Yeah.
And then we went and opened for the Dictators that night, and it was like the best night of our lives.
Really?
Yeah.
What does the best night of your lives look like? Great show.
We played it. It was a packed crowd. It was a sold-out crowd at Empty Bottle.
And we sat down in the basement with the Dictators and talked about metal bands and... Then it was time for us to play, and they actually came out and watched us. And
that's cool.
All our friends from Minneapolis drove in to Chicago to see us. Well, actually, just for the festival we were playing, but they came and saw us. And then we got to see the Dictators play, and we were all just grinning from ear to ear. They had a great relationship with their audience. There was this crazy thing going on. It was great.
That's awesome.
They were amazing.
Yeah. So I'm going to name off some dates that you guys are playing. Cool. You're going to be on tour with Spoon in December. You'll be playing December 6th at the Swan Dive. Is that with Spoon?
It's going to be December 5th. It got moved because we have to leave.
Oh, I'll come to it.
Badass. We'd like that.
I will come to it.
That's going to be with the Blind Pets and Modrag.
Modrag.
They're putting out an album that night, so it's going to be a good tour kickoff for us. And then... we're on tour for 2 weeks.
With Spoon.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be exciting. And this time you'll be nice. You're going to go up to Portland. You're going to go to Boise, Idaho. That's wild.
I hear Boise has a scene.
I'm sure it does.
I was laughing. I was like, we're going to play in all these places like Salt Lake City and Tempe and places I've never thought about going to and Boise. Someone's like, Boise is the place to go play right now. I'm like, well, I look forward to that.
Yeah. Do you guys have a van and stuff that you're going to...
Yeah,
you
know? Andy Bauer bought a van a few years back.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah.
It's got almost 200,000 miles on it, though. Yeah.
Everyone in town was using it for tour for a little while, and you had to put a stop to that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you guys had the van. We're like, did you rent it?
Yeah, we rented out to
for, like, vans. Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, super cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just trying to make his money
like
back.
Fucking old banana peels.
Yeah.
There's and soup.
Stickers all on the inside. Oh. Seats are all torn up. But
and you play the toll booth game.
Yeah.
People from Austin, bands from Austin should know the toll booth game because it's something that's getting more popular.
Yeah. It's taking the country by storm.
Yeah.
Sweeping the nation.
you go through a toll booth And you wait for the moment that you receive your change back or your ticket back, and then...
And you go, I love you.
Yeah.
And you stare at him in the eyes.
You make sincere eye contact.
Yeah. My friend Taylor Davis does that with everyone.
Yeah.
Every toll
booth
operator?
Starbucks people. No, oh, he does it with everyone.
Everyone? Maybe yeah, he's the originator of this.
He might be. He was very awesome. Like, he would go give his guest list to the door person. I went on tour with him, like, 6 years ago or something. And he would go to the door person and give him the names on the list. And she'd be like, is that it? And he'd be like, yeah. She's like, all right. He'd go, I love you. And then he'd be like, and he's like, walk away. I don't know if he did the whole eye thing as intensely as that.
Well, that's why it's a game. There's so many elements, like,
yeah.
Especially if somebody else is like, they've never played the game before, they'll just like fuck it up.
By yeah, going, you like, get kind of this nervous rush when you're about to tell a stranger that you love them.
Yeah.
And because anything could happen. And I find that when Andrew does it, usually he gets a pretty positive reaction. But then our drummer Orville, when he would do it, he'd get a pretty hostile reaction usually. So, and
it's
then
just
it depends
that,
how
that
the
moment of when you're pulling up, you go, oh fuck, this guy's like 250 pounds, looks like he's been to prison.
Yeah,
all right, I'm gonna do it. Like,
this woman looks like she eats cats.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. And then if the passenger, the co-pilot, is really important element too, because if they make some douchey face, then the toll booth operator
knows something's up,
that they're being punked. But if the person in the passenger seat just keeps a low profile, it can actually make someone's day.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen people's day like flip around just by doing that, and their arms will be up in the air, like in the rearview mirror. Just
that's
like,
what it should. That's what it should do.
Yeah. Give a little love.
You guys are like Jesus.
Yeah.
Oh,
you're like the Jesus of the highways.
I've always felt that way, but nobody's ever said it.
I know. I've always felt like Jesus.
Like we are.
I've always felt like.
Yeah. Jake Gyllenhaal should play Jesus in a movie.
Yeah.
But it's about like a boy who's born now, and he like thinks that he's the second coming of Christ.
But he's not.
And well, he looks in the mirror. I don't know. He finally performs his first miracle, and he goes, I've always thought I was Jesus. I've always felt like Jesus. I just saw the whole movie play out when I saw your Gyllenhaal-esque face.
Yeah.
You know?
Your execution was like Richard Lewis or like
he can
Woody Allen
be
or something.
In the movie.
Like the most neurotic.
I'm
sort of
very
like
similar to Woody Allen in very many ways.
Yeah?
Yeah. I would prefer to be Matthew McConaughey, but I'm more of a Woody Allen.
You'd be a lot cooler if you were.
Oh, that's great.
Andrew.
Sabrina, is there anything I'm missing? That was great talking to you guys. It was a pretty freeform like podcast. Are you okay? I felt that sometimes I annoyed you, Andrew.
I just come off that way.
Do you have do you guys know Bob Schneider?
Not personally.
The Schneid?
Yeah. The Schneid.
No, we don't know him personally, but we joke about him a lot.
Poor guy.
Is he a nice guy?
Yeah, he's really fucking nice.
I'm sure he is.
He's really nice. You know, he gets his rap of being like an asshole, and it's because he has his resting face that's not smiling. Like, when you come up and say hi and you're talking to him, his relaxed resting face is kind of like yours. Like, I am not impressed with anything that you're doing right now. And so
Andrew,
he can come off as an asshole, but he's really grateful that someone's coming up and saying that. Just when he's not talking, he's like,
well, it's
you
good
know
he
I mean?
Has you to advocate him. And Andrew, this is going to happen to you. You realize
really
people are going
like
to be like,
this.
Oh, the cash.
Andrew,
yeah, that guy.
I'm totally going to advocate you
that
as well.
That guy's such a
you're going to be on my list of don't hate that guy.
Man.
You
remember
James McMurtry?
I don't know him. I was friends with his grandson back when he used to live here. We worked together at Home Slice, Curtis. He's a really cool young man. But no, I don't know James.
James is another guy. People assume very mean, an underbite.
Or not his grandson, it's his son.
Yeah.
I remember Max from Beerland, like one time I ran out of contacts and I put on my glasses and went and saw a show. And then somebody told me Max from Beerland was just like, oh, he can't see. I just thought he hated me.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like,
yeah.
He's like, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
I was like, okay.
Yeah. I don't know. You like being told that. People, what people think of you?
I don't care.
Cause,
what are you gonna tell me right now? What you actually think of me?
Mm, No, I'll never. Okay.
Let's push that back.
A giant dog, and also look out for Sweet Spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have to come back and see you.
Come back
again
as Sweet Spirit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are welcome to come back anytime. I really like you. What and about, I really, you guys, your
when
music.
When the soup's ready, can we come back and.
Yeah, come back tonight.
Stinking up the place.
I'm saying. I know that it'll be done by about 6:15.
Yeah.
According to the timer. But I want to eat it around 8:30. Let it simmer. Let those juices.
This is going to be a conundrum.
Yeah.
It is going to be a conundrum.
We'll be headed to.
I will be flummoxed.
Vegas at that time.
You're heading to Vegas?
Hotel Vegas.
Hotel Vegas. Oh yeah, that's where you're playing tonight. Oh, this I don't know when this is going to come out. So.
Yeah. Neither do we. But you can find Bone online, and there's still some copies of that.
At record stores like End of an Ear or something.
Mm-hmm, you can find it at End of an Ear and at Trailer Space.
Okay, and the band is A Giant Dog. You can go to their Bandcamp, look them up, look up Bandcamp, or look up A Giant Dog on Bandcamp. Do you have a Facebook page?
Yeah, we do.
I think I went to your page. That's where I wrote you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and we just had a photo shoot.
Oh, yeah?
We'll have some pictures so you can see what we look like, this mean mug on Andrew.
Yeah,
we
went to a gay club.
Oh, yeah. Did you?
We went to Rain. And they treated us really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet you get totally free cocaine there all the time. And every shoe is under the stall every day. I'm sorry.
It was like the 80s there for us.
So you did a photo shoot when it was going off? Did you go on Halloween or something and do it?
No. This was last night. It was going off at all. There was three dudes at the bar.
It wasn't even a sausage fest.
Yeah.
We got to meet everyone that worked there, though, and they... You know, they let us just kind of run around and take pictures wherever we wanted, and I appreciated that.
Climbing on stuff.
Yeah, climbing on stuff, knocking things over.
Who was the photographer?
Steven Rude. He's our...
Is he a guy?
He's a guy that we admire, and he does work with Rubberneck John Chamberlain's photo zine. It's a local thing.
He just shot Fun 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 Fest for Vice.
For Vice,
oh
yeah.
Wow!
He did a great job on that.
Yeah.
And
you know what? I'm always looking for new photographers. What's his name?
Steven with a V. You're trying to lose weight, eating nothing but soup. It's Rudd, and he's a really talented local photographer.
I've seen his name.
He's been around here, you know, for a long time.
I'll check him out. All right, A Giant Dog, Andrew, Sabrina, you guys are awesome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to go see you on December 5th.
Oh, great.
That's going to be a great night at Swan Dive.
Mm-hmm.
All right, look for me in the audience. I'll be waving.
The whole time we play.
Yeah. Thanks for coming. Amazing, right? You like them, Jake?
Yes.
Yeah. That was a great conversation with Andrew and Sabrina. Do you feel like you know them maybe now a little bit better than you did when we started this conversation?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Well, it was really good. I found it to be very interesting.
Okay. Me too. I like them. They're going to be starting their tour with Spoon December 9th, Knitting Factory. If you're in Boise, Idaho, that's where you're going to want to be. But go check them out at their Bandcamp site, A Giant Dog. Their album, Bone, produced by Mike McCarthy, and they've got a new album coming out soon, hopefully. All right, so while you're out there on the internet getting into A Giant Dog and all of their antics and their whereabouts, you can like our Facebook page. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and that'll show up every Tuesday and every Friday in your iTunes folder. How do you do it, Jake? How do you listen to the show?
Stitcher.
Oh, yeah, Stitcher. You can also find us on Stitcher with over 5,000 other shows. What other shows do you have on your Stitcher, Jake?
I have the one that Ralphie May does.
Yeah? What's that like? I've never listened to it.
It's the top 10 or perfect 10 or something. I'm not too sure. I just have it on there, and I throw them on my iPod while I'm riding in between, you know, cities doing shows.
There you go. Guys. With us, yeah. Jake travels with Skyrocket, as you know from the intro. Listen. Guys, when you're out there on the iTunes, do subscribe to the podcast. When you're there, leave a comment, leave a rating. I want to thank you, Jake, for coming by and hanging out with me on Thanksgiving. This was Podcast Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, let's hear some more music from A Giant Dog. You can find them on Bandcamp. They're awesome. I want to thank Andrew and Sabrina for coming by. They're so cool. They're touring with Spoon in September. And if you live in Austin, December 5th at the Swan Dive, get down. I will be there. Find me in the audience. I will be dancing. Happy Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, Jake.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Let's get down.